500 years ago, he washed ashore the sole survivor of a shipwreck. And upon the skull of the man who killed his dad, he said, I'm mad, I must eradicate piracy, injustice and cruelty, and all my sons will follow me. So evildoers will believe that this man cannot die.
G'day, this is X-Band, the French podcast. Our website is CoracleChamber.com, and you can subscribe to our podcast via YouTube or through your favourite podcast apps. Today, we are doing something a little bit different. We are going to be talking to the Phantom. No, not Billy Zane. Today, we are going to be talking to cosplay Chris, who caused a bit of a sensation, especially amongst Phantom fans, at Supernova 2022. Where he dressed up as the Phantom, which is inspired heavily by the Phantom movie featuring Billy Zane. So I hope you enjoy this episode. So sit back, grab a glass of milk, and enjoy. So hello, Chris. How are you?
Good, man. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
No worries. Now, so we've got you on because you created a bit of a stir at the recent Sydney Supernova, dressing up as the Phantom. You had a lot of good comments, a lot of good feedback. I personally missed you. I was looking for you. You must have been walking behind me, like going wherever I was and where I just left or something like that. So I'm going to enjoy today to catch up with you. So welcome. Why the Phantom? Let's get straight into it.
As I said to everyone at Supernova, and before I go any further, I reckon it was one of those things where you and I just missed each other by a booth. Like, but it always happens. It always happens. You miss your mates by a booth at a con. I think the Phantom doesn't get enough love, especially this day and age with how heavy the superhero genre is. Mm. And, you know, you got your Marvels, your DCs. I just feel the Phantom, unfortunately, just getting buried in amongst it and just forgotten. And I get it that it's, you know, the old timey adventure serials thing, but there's something just so charming and funny about those adventure serials. They're always going to stand the test of time, even if it has a small audience. And I just wanted to, I've always wanted to cosplay the Phantom. It's always been in the back of my head for years. And I thought when the time is right and I've got something in my head that I feel will work in present day, then I'll do it. And then I met Billy Zane at Supernova in Adelaide in 2019. And I had an original Jeffrey Boehm script that was sent to me by a fan, the original script with the original dialogue before it went in and got rewritten. And it was in a black binder. And I took it to show him. Like I didn't want it signed or anything. And I've still got it. It's, you know, got all the original dialogue. And it was a bit different than the final cut of the film. And I showed him and he loves all that stuff. And he's like, oh my God, he's like, can I take photos? I'm like, yeah, go for it, man. So he had a quick read. He goes, yeah, this is what I first read when I got offered the part. And then after that, I was like, oh, I've really got to do this cosplay now, but I wanted something again, modern, but also that kind of honed back to the look of what Billy had in the film and also the comics, just, you know, staying true with the aesthetic, but also bringing it into this realm, like this day and age where it would be a suit that would protect him. But obviously it's been battle worn and, you know, I've still got heaps of work to do on the suit. But again, to answer your question, I just felt the Phantom doesn't get enough love. And the reception and the response was absolutely amazing. And I was trying to hunt each and every one of you down, you know, the illustrators, the writers, and obviously Jamie and stuff like that, just to get the approval, because that means the world to get from the guys that, you know, it's your bread and butter and it's, you know, the mythology, you know, the character in and out, like it's a parent or a child. It's just, you know, the character, and to have that tick of approval, that means a lot.
Yeah. Now, obviously there are some changes to it and we'll go into some of those as well, but now, I've only seen it in photos, like literally I was catching up, I was talking to Duncan and then I left and then like 5 minutes later, he sent me the photo of him and Duncan. So I can attest to the fact that we were must have been one booth away. So most people have said that it's true with, it's the true 1930s, not, you know, original style with modern tweaks that still show respect to the original costume. That's how fans have described it to me. Does that sound fairly accurate to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man. And like going back to what I previously said, it was always the idea to keep the basic aesthetic there. Mm. Like, don't change it up. Like we see some superhero costumes that are translated from comic to film these days, and they make certain changes and you think, why did you do that? It could look so good, like ripped right off the pages of the comic book. And that it was always going to be purple. I did tinker with the idea of just having the upper section purple and combat pants and boots, like black or gray or olive drab combat pants, stuff like that. Very, very tactical. But I'm like, no, don't. When I first initially got the bodysuit, I was like, this looks so silly. I look like Grimace I just look so silly, and it hadn't been weathered. It was a bright purple, and I put it on. I'm like, nah, I can't do this. I look like an idiot. So I put it in my cupboard for 7 months, no joke. And every time I'd look at it, I'm like, oh, no. And I hadn't even started on the cowl. And then something just percolated a couple of months ago, and I'm like, yep, okay, I put the suit back on, and I'd been training as well, so I felt just a lot more stronger, and I put on a bit of size, and like, okay, cool, this has got potential. And keep in mind, you know, when you weather it, darken it, it'll translate a lot differently when you've got it on and on camera and stuff like that. And yeah, that's when I got to work, man. Again, just keeping the aesthetic there, but also modernizing it. But as soon as someone looks at it, they'll be like, that's the Phantom. And that's how it was at Supernova. But it's funny, a lot of like older gentlemen will like pull me aside, or they're just like a kid seeing Batman. They're like, no one cosplays as the Phantom. This is great. Yeah. Like, this is brilliant. So, you know, it's people know it straight away. And that's all that I wanted. I didn't want someone looking at me and being like, is that the Phantom? But no, it was the first reaction. So it was good.
Awesome. Now, did you grow up on the Phantom? If I had to guess, you would be in your 30s.
Yes. So I'm 33, turning 34 in December. I did grow up on the Phantom. I grew up before the film came out. I grew up on the 3-panel comic in the Daily Telegraph every day. You know, what will happen next? And then I also used to buy some of the comics from the local newsagent. And even though I tried to read them as best as I could, like my little pea brain mind couldn't fathom or understand exactly what was going on. I was more for the visuals because I've always loved the aesthetic of the Phantom. And then the film came out, and I remember the lead up to that. And do you remember the Disney Adventure magazines, the little Disney Adventures? They did a big spread on the Phantom film and interviewing Billy Zane, and they had great photos of him. And then there's that, I don't know if it's a deleted scene from the film, but it's him in the water having a swim, you know, without the suit on and his wig and all that. And he looks really cool. And I remember my dad bought me the diary, the 1997 diary that had a lot of stuff from the film in there, but it had a lot of photos from day one of when Lee, you know, first published the Phantom, and then, you know, Captain Africa, when they lost the rights to the serial and they had to name him the Adventures of Captain Africa, all the way up to the film. And the book was destroyed in storage from mold, and I'm on eBay actually at the moment watching one, so I'm going to buy that because that was really cool, and Dad inscribed in it as well, so I was really sad that it got destroyed, so I want to get Dad to inscribe it in again. And then Dad took me to see the film, and I was a big sook with it. I was scared when I saw the film. It was that only scene, and I think a lot of kids would have got freaked out by it, when Xander Drax has the blades in the in the microscope. And I remember when that happened, I was like, you know, put my hands over my face, and I was like, Mom, Dad, I know what it is. And Dad's
how like, old? How old would have you been?
So that came out in 96. I would have been 8 years old.
Yeah. Honestly. So that's probably fair enough. I would have been 13 or 14. And, you know, it was kind of, it's There's aspects of the movie that's quite adult, and if you've ever read the book or the script, there was actually a love scene between Sala and Drax Quill as well. So you know, like they meet up in a dingy bar and then go upstairs and make love. So you know, like I remember reading the book and I'm going, oh, I don't remember that in the movies, but there was a lot of adult bits in the movie that they kind of try to take out to make it PG, and that somehow that one stayed in there.
See, I had no idea about that, but yeah, like you said, a lot of adult aspects, and then you got Drax spearing a guy in the back in that boardroom, and I'm like, this guy is nuts. I'm 8 years old. I'm like, this guy is like worse than Freddy Krueger. He's crazy. Yeah. But when people ask what got me into like props and costuming and stuff like that, I do say a lot of the time the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man suit, and I always forget to say the work that Jim Henson and his crew did on. Jim Henson had passed away, but the Jim Henson company, what they did on Billy's suit, and the fact, and I told this to him when I met him at Supernova. I go, dude, the fact you didn't have to wear a muscle suit and that was all you, that is badass. And he looked at me and he goes, when you're gonna play the king of the jungle, you go all in. I was like, yeah, oh, thank you, sir.
And it helped that he was a fan as well. Like, you know, he read the comics when, you know, he read the comics when he came to Australia to do Dead Calm, and you know, and you're right, he didn't do a muscle suit. It was, you know, I'm sure he would like us to say, you know, 100% Billy.
Yeah, that's it. 100% Billy, that's it. I do love it when an actor takes on a role, and mostly like superhero roles that they've been a fan, read the comics. You look at Tom Holland when he was a little boy, he's dressed up as Spider-Man. Now he is Spider-Man. Henry Cavill, Ben Affleck, when they were kids, they were photographed, you know, Batman and Superman t-shirts. Ryan Reynolds with Deadpool. When an actor's interviewed and they go, oh, I never read the comics when I was a kid, it's very deterring. It's like, I'm not that invested. But yeah, and Billy was a fan too. And that means that they're going to give it their all. Like, they got one shot at this. Well, if there's multiple picture deals, I don't know if there ever was talk to do a sequel.
Christie Swanson and Billy Zane were signed for two sequels, but it just never happened, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame. Like, it would have been like, Billy still got it. Like, he's still a fit looking bloke. She's still very, very attractive woman. It'd be cool to see if they did something now
where they pass it on to the next one.
Yeah, almost like a Dark Knight Returns Frank Miller kind of thing. You know, not old and grizzled, but like, you know, he's an old brute of a phantom that's got to step down and So yeah, the film was a big deal when it came out, and it had a massive reception here on VHS and then DVD. Like, it blew up big time. And funny enough, I got in the mail a couple of weeks ago, I found one of the original posters of I think it's such a good poster, not the one that's in the background there, the one where the light's shining down through the skull. Cave.
Yeah.
And he's on the throne. I'm like, that is such a cool poster. And I found an original one from 96 on eBay in the States. Got here the other day, so I've got to get it framed because I love it. It was always such a badass poster.
Yeah. Antonio Lemus painted that scene for a Fru comic. It would have been released maybe 5 years ago as well. So it's such an awesome scene, that one. Much better than the Slam Evil.
I still think there's something fun about, you know, Slam Evil. I think, like, obviously that's a very corporate poster, but then the other one is like,
it's iconic. So now, you know, you're a fan, you've read the comics, you've loved the movie. As we can see, anyone, if you're on YouTube, I would recommend, if you're not on YouTube, I would recommend going on YouTube, watching this, because you can see some cool props behind you. We'll talk about your Phantom ones, but what you do for a job is, tell us a little bit about what you do for a job and stuff like that, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the Phantom.
Cool. So, online, I'm pretty much known as Cosplay Chris. Got my YouTube channel based around cosplay, props, tutorials, stuff like that, you know, collectible reviews, just a lot of geeky stuff. And I try to, you know, pack a lot under that umbrella just so there's variety with my channel. So I've been building on and off since I was like 12 or 13 years old. And it started with Freddy Krueger gloves and then got fascinated with costuming, specialty costuming for film. Like I said, when the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films came out and those costumes were just so seamless and awesome and reading about how they were made. And I started the YouTube channel 2014 whilst working at Sydney Airport. And, you know, I built up a good following and it started to pay pretty good. And then I was also doing commissions on the side, stuff like that with my Etsy store. And when Batman v Superman was gearing up in 2016, that was a big, busy year for like Batfleck related stuff, like belts, cowls, stuff like that. And a lot of content based around that. So I've always tried to kind of keep with the theme of what's trending at the moment. Like we talked about the upcoming Halloween film, Halloween Ends, is going to be a lot of content and props based around that coming out. And then I got made redundant with my job and they were really supportive. They're like, if there's something else you want to do in the business, we'll help you get there. If not, here's a payout based on how long you've been here. And I figured that's time to do this full time. So I've been doing it full time ever since. I've been, fortunate enough to work in LA, the Middle East. I've got a trip coming up in October to Canada, for a convention there to be a guest there, which I'm actually going to probably take this suit to Nova Scotia, Canada, which should be a bit of fun. So again, mostly freelance artists. I was very fortunate enough to work on Thor Love and Thunder for a couple of weeks last year with Odd Studio, who were here in Sydney, who won the Oscar for Mad Max Fury Road in the makeup department. So
when you say that you've worked on it, what does that entail? I'm assuming you can let us know, of course.
Yeah, I can let you know now. So I was at the studio, Odd Studios here in Sydney, not Fox Studios, so completely separate. But we had a lot of the guys at Odd, you know, going back and forth from Fox Studios, which is like 20 minutes down the road from Odd Studio. I worked on this big 3D printed dead body of a god known as the Dark Shadow Lord, whom is at the prologue of the film with Christian Bale's Gore, who originally wields the Necrosword. Basically, they just needed a physical prop for Bale to interact with and to be on set. So Colin Ware of Odd Studio, who's a wonderful sculptor, digitally sculpted it. The pieces were printed, and then my job was to pretty much put them together, patch them, seam them, and then it was painted by Damian Martin of Odd Studio and then shipped off to Fox Studios down the road. So that was 2 weeks of putting him together and doing all the finessing and all the final touches on him. So that was great. It was really good. And I knew it was just going to be a static prop and they were going to zhuzhu him up digitally, but they just needed something there on set.
So 2 weeks worth of work, and how long was it on film for?
3 or 4 seconds, but again, that it's that's pretty standard. You know you got artists, you know, busting their chops to get something made and you blink and you miss it, but if it's as long as you see it, that's still pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. So is that the first time that you've worked on, say, a movie? Or
That was like big, yeah. Before that, I've had the opportunity to act in two Hollywood films, even though I've seen one. So one was called Adverse with Thomas Ian Nicholas, who was in American Pie. He played Kevin in American Pie, and it's kind of like a revenge kind of movie. And I was a stunt guy in that had to get smacked by him with a rubber tire iron. It was in this one take shot of him going down a hallway of just wasting all these guys. And it was cool. It was really cool because he was one of my idols growing up. So it was really cool to hang out with him and film that. And then another film that's due out hopefully in a couple of months is The Outlaw Johnny Black with Michael Jai White, whom you may know from Spawn and The Dark Knight. So it's a Western. I don't know if you ever saw Black Dynamite.
No.
So it's like a, you know, black exploitation kind of thing, but it's like a massive piss take essentially, but it's very well done. The way they filmed it was just really cool. And this is essentially the Western version of Black Dynamite. So I played the barkeep. I was over in Santa Clarita in California in the old ranches there filming. So that's due out in a couple of months, I think. So played the barkeep there and I got to, you know, share a scene with him. So, and again, like Thomasine and Nicholas, he's one of my idols growing up. I was a big Spawn fan, still am. And yeah, it was just really cool. So I love being in front and behind the camera. And again, that's why I kind of just want to do everything in terms of like filmmaking, you know, props, acting, just love doing it all.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Did not know half of that when I asked you on here. So yeah, no.
There you go.
So I guess we'll swing back around to the Phantom. This is the Phantom podcast, of course. So behind you again, if you're not on YouTube, I'll describe it to the best of my ability, but I would recommend going on YouTube and watching this. We're seeing two busts, one with a Phantom cowl on and then one without. Can you tell us a little bit about those and then we can talk about the bit of the costume and kind of go from there?
Absolutely, man. So it's mirrored here. So I'm like, wait, what? So what you see here is the original 3D print of a scan of my head. So a friend of mine who does a lot of 3D printing work, he bought a brand new hand scanner where you can digitally scan someone. And I, so this is my old life cast that was done the old school way with, you know, alginate and stuff like that and plaster bandage. Whereas this is a digital life cast to me. So I had my friend Miles scan me. It was then sent to a friend of mine called Art Deving who cleaned up the scan. And Art Deving also designed the cowl. So I gave him instructions. I wanted to hone back to Billy Zane, but also be a bit more tactical. And the cool thing was he asked for close-ups of the fabric that's used on the bodysuit. And he was able to replicate the texture of that fabric on this cowl and included all the stitching and stuff like that. So this is the Mark II print. The Mark I print, the crown here was a lot higher and I've got the Mark I cowl in the cupboard there. It was so high, my hairline was showing through. So I'd actually shave part of my hair for Supernova when I saw Jamie and met everyone there. But this is the Mark II cowl where the crown is a lot lower and I had it reprinted. So what you do is once you do all the body work, it's all clean and 3D printed. You take a silicon mold of it with a plaster bandage or a fiberglass shell to hold its shape. And then you get a flexible polyurethane. So in this case, this was cast in a product called F125, which is a very soft, flexible polyurethane. You literally just pour it in the mold, slush it about until it starts to gel and set. And this was two layers of doing that, pull it out and essentially it looks like this but purple. So you trim out the face. A lot of airbrushing was done because it was a very, it was almost like that when it came out of the mold. So you can tint the urethane, but it's hard to match the suit initially. You got to do a lot of paint work. So this effect was achieved with like inks you can get from an art shop fed through an airbrush to try and match the purple of the bodysuit, a darker purple, and then went in and weathered all the seams, like soiling and stuff like that, again, to match the bodysuit and the weathering of the bodysuit. And then the eye mask here is cast in a rigid resin, so it holds its shape. I did try casting the eye mask in the same material as this. The thing is, once you use a flexible rubber on an eye mask, if it pulls, it distorts. Yeah. Whereas if you have a solid resin, it's essentially just like putting sunglasses on. It holds its shape.
Yeah, and they're molded so they fit better. And
exactly. That's exactly right. The only thing is these are a bit more fragile than a flexible rubber. So this is the second pair. I dropped the first pair on the ground in my kitchen and they just shattered. I was like, no. So I had like, it doesn't take long to make them again, but it's just a lot of fussing about.
So how much would you know, like the headpiece, we're just talking about the cowl and the mask here, how much, you know, you don't have to give us exact, but what's a ballpark figure and how long does that take?
So if we're just going without the Mark One and just the Mark Two, to have that 3D printed was $300. There's a place in China called Fact Fox that resin prints these. And with resin printers, you get a lot more detail. especially with the stitching and the texture. So you pay for what's called a HD print, and it's totally worth it. Like, there's minimal cleanup. It's just a couple of coats of primer filler and primer, and then it's good to mold. So all probably looking at about $600, and you also have to take into account R&D. So there are a couple of castings that didn't end up getting used. Some were too thick, some were too thin, and this is just right, this one. So everything over $1,000 for sure with the V1. Yeah, wow. That didn't work out. And then the body
suit. And that's just the cow.
That's just the cow. The body suit on top of that, yeah, probably another $600.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, so you have to have a minor treasure room to be able to do something like this.
Yes, absolutely, man. And if it's going to look right, you got to be up for, you know, investing in good quality products. And I didn't want to half-ass it, especially because I know how loyal the Phantom fan base is. And quite frankly, it's refreshing because the Phantom fan base is some of the most gentle people I've ever met in like a fandom's part is concerned. But also you'd also just want to make people proud who are fans of the Phantom. So again, I just wanted to go all out. And the boots as well. I remember when I met, when I saw Jamie at Supernova, he was taking photos of all parts of the suit and he's looking at the boots. He's like, what the hell are those? And I'm like, the motocross boots. But there's this motocross boot you can get called the former adventure boot. So a lot of motocross boots, you can barely walk in because they're designed to protect, you know, your shins and your ankles from getting obliterated in an accident. So you can barely walk in them. But these boots, you can run, you can jump, you can do everything in them. And they look very tactical. Bit expensive, totally worth it because they're very comfy. And yeah, once I got them, I just weathered them and distressed them on par with the cowl and the bodysuit. The rings as well. The rings, I wanted to have bits of like flesh and blood in them, like he's just pounded some guy to a pulp and there's still remnants of his cheek on the ring. Just really Zack Snydering the Phantom, I guess you could say. And then I put makeup on my hands. There's an alcohol activated makeup you can use called Skin Illustrator, which a lot of makeup artists use. Just to have like bloody knuckles and everything and red raw knuckles too. Like he's just been in a big biff. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Do you have your rings handy or?
I can. I'm just trying to remember where they are. Actually, no, I don't. Sorry. I thought I did. So I do a lot of my filming at my mum and dad's place where we've got the big workshop there. Whereas here, my apartment, there's not much room. So I've got, apart from the cowl, the rest of the suit there. So yeah, the rings were essentially brass. The reason why I got brass, because they're a lot cheaper than silver. And I was like, oh man, I've sunk so much money into this costume. So I actually just, this is going to sound so cheap and nasty. I got a silver Sharpie and colored them silver.
Yeah.
And look, it worked, man. It was a money saver. And by the time all the fake blood's on it, you don't even realize it. And once my hands are all dirty and all that, you wouldn't even notice.
So what was the most what was the most difficult part of the whole costume?
Matching the color of the cowl to the bodysuit. And purple is the hardest thing to read on camera. So you probably know, obviously seeing the film, Billy's costume shifts color a lot. I'm fortunate enough to be in contact with Doug Stewart, who airbrushed his cows. He airbrushed the tribal pattern on Billy's cows.
Oh, wow.
So the bodysuit was a very kind of heavy woven lycra. And then the cows were foam latex. And to match the cowl to the bodysuit, they had several cows, different shades of purple, depending on what lighting conditions they were using, apparently. But Doug's job was ultimately to have stencils of the tribal pattern and airbrush it on. And yeah, it's hard. It's very hard. I tried to get it as close as possible. And especially when it's fresh out of the mold, these cows, you're like, that looks nothing like the bodysuit. But you got to realize once everything's airbrushed, weather distressed, darkened down, and muted. Because this has an acrylic matte sealer sprayed on it, so it's not glossy. It has that matte finish like the bodysuit. So yeah, that was definitely the hardest part. And actually, finding a left-handed drop holster is so hard. I'm a lefty, and it's very easy to find a right-handed drop holster, but to find that exact drop holster with on the left side was next to impossible. I actually had to get different parts of the drop holster from separate buyers on eBay and kit bash something together that looks similar to the right drop holster.
We've just interviewed another cosplayer, and he said exactly the same thing, that the left was really hard to find as well. So it's interesting. You just wouldn't have thought about that. So, So you told us about the cow was about $1,000. What about the whole costume? How much would have you sunk into that?
Probably $2,000-$2,500, man. Yeah.
Wow.
Easily. And yeah, take into account a lot of polyurethane, because so this is F125. I experimented with F140, F150. That just means that it's not as flexible as this. The lower you go in a shore thickness, the more flexible it's going to be. So F125 is their softest urethane. F190, it still flexes, but it's quite rigid. So yeah, you got to take into account a lot of stuff you don't use. I wouldn't say wasted, because it's all part of the process of R&D, trial, error. You've got to account for stuff that ultimately will be wasted and thrown in the bin. But evidently and ultimately, it leads to this. So about $2,500, man. And that's pretty standard for a high-end cosplay, whereas like bat suits, Spider-Man suits, Superman costumes are concerned. That's a pretty good estimate for something that's of a high quality for a cosplay.
Now, did you have any trouble with guns? Because obviously Australia's got a small, stricter gun control license than, say, the United States, without getting all political. Did you have to get a gun license, or like what was your process with the guns?
Funny enough, they're children's toy cult M1911s that you can get. And originally they're rainbow color. And I've done a tutorial on my YouTube channel of painting one of them to look like a realistic cult. So I bought two of them, sprayed them black, dry brushed them with like silver rub and buff to make them look like scuffed and stuff like that. And funny enough, I was actually, for my skull belt buckle mold, I was going to cast the skull section and glue them onto each side of the handle, but it ran out of time. So that's something I'd like to do down the track. No gun license. I painted the orange tips on them before Supernova, which it's an interesting rule, really. But I got there and I'm like, man, I got to go straight to weapons checks. Otherwise, someone's going to, a volunteer is going to be like, hey, you got to go to weapons check. No one cared. And I didn't really have the guns out, to be honest, apart from a few videographers who were like, hey, can you strike a pose with you pulling the guns out of your drop holsters? Apart from that, the only pose I was really doing was, you know, the cross arms kind of thing, you know, the heroic thing. So yeah, no license, man. And that was from, I think, Armored Heaven, which I've bought a few things from before. So yeah, it definitely is a bit of a gray area. But again, I'm not one of those people that would be like out there flashing them. I just keep them in the drop holsters. And as long as you got the orange tips on there, you're covered.
And you are dressed up as the Phantom, and the Phantom is a trustworthy guy. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's it. So people should just be like, he's fine. He's fine. He's not trouble.
Yeah. So would you go to the extreme of like doing the trench coat to go over your Phantom costume? Is that something you've thought about?
I have looked into a dear friend of mine who's a wonderful cosplayer based here in Sydney. His name's Billy Mabry. He did the Gotham by Gaslight version of the Phantom with the goggles and the trench coat. I want to do that. That looks like a lot of fun. I love that kind of steampunk era, especially when cosplayers steampunkify their characters. I think it's a lot of fun, and your imagination can run quite wild with stuff like that. So I definitely want to do it. I've also written a short to utilize the costume, a Phantom short that hopefully will be filmed this year.
Oh, wow.
And then beginning of September, I've got a photo shoot down at a family friend's farm in Yass here in New South Wales. So her name's Karen, and she has Heavy Horse Heaven, where she takes in horses who are, you know, ready to retire or need therapy, physical therapy, stuff like that, and rehoming. Karen rehabilitates them and finds them homes. And she's got this big, beautiful white horse. Oh, and I'm like,
perfect.
I'm like, that's my hero. So beginning of September, I'll be taking the suit down to Yass, and we're going to be doing a photo shoot down there with a very talented photographer, Glenn, who did my Witcher photo shoot when I did Geralt a couple of years ago on a big black horse they had there called Diesel. But now Kaz has a big, beautiful white horse there that's going to act as my hero. So that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, make sure you love to keep in touch, and because I'm sure there'll be other fans that will be interested in seeing some of the photos and the processes and all that. So I would love to keep in touch about that.
Absolutely, man. And in terms of the short, I'm happy to talk about it because some people I've given the script to, they're like, oh, do you mind if I show this to someone? I'm like, dude, this isn't Marvel. I don't give a fuck. So it's essentially a chase scene through the Bengala jungle. And I've location sourced Horseshoe Falls up in the Blue Mountains here in New South Wales. It's got beautiful waterfalls, look very Bengala-esque. And the idea is, you know, because it's the ghost who walks, you know, it's kind of that Batman thing. You kind of strike that fear before the Phantom starts pursuing this Tomb Raider who's taken some artifacts as well as his father's old gun belt, honing back to the film. What I want is a shot of me with the skull ring, smashing it on a tree with a sap that's leaking out of the tree that's like a hallucinogenic sap. So when I do catch up to this guy, smack him one, and that sap gets into his wound and he starts hallucinating and essentially seeing a demonic version of myself, and that's like a ghost. So that's what I've written. It's only going to be a couple of minutes long, but I'm really excited about it. Just something different as well, and just making the Phantom badass again. Like, he's always been a badass, but I just, again, like I said at the beginning of this of our chat, I just feel like he doesn't get enough love.
Yeah.
And I really, it would be cool to do a short, put it out there to the world and get people interested in the Phantom again.
Yeah, exactly. Remind them that he's still out there. We've still got, you know, the comics, you know, there's still great opportunity with cosplay and everything else like that. I remember, you know, going to Supernova 10, 12 years ago, there was no creators at the conventions or anything like that. At the Sydney one, you had that one section. Every second person had worked on the Phantom. There was about seven or eight of them. It's good to see him, even in just Australia, making a bit of a presence again.
Well, that's the thing. He's always had a big presence in Australia.
Mm.
And you tell a lot of people, they're like, oh, the Phantom. I'm like, keep in mind, man, he came before Superman and Batman. Everyone's like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, he's older than Batman and Superman. Funny enough, I used to own issue one of the Italian Phantom in the red suit.
Yeah.
And I bought it from Oz Comic Con 2015. Bought it for $1,000, and I held onto that thing for so long, and I sold it, and I'm kicking myself that I did, because that thing was so old. I had to handle it with gloves, and I felt like one wrong move and it'd be like the Thanos snap. It would just turn to dust. And funny enough, I was talking to a gentleman in the States who owns Billy's horse stunt rider's suit from the film. He had the upper and lower, nothing else. The tunic was a replica. The cowl, all that was a replica. The gun belt was a replica. It was just the upper and lower. And he showed me photos of it. And ultimately, price-wise and all, just wasn't for me. But it was still a beautiful thing. And he sent all these beautiful up-close photos. And just to see that suit up close was so cool, because when you're a little kid, you can only rely on magazines and stuff like that to see photos of the suit. But now with social media and how good photos are with camera phones and stuff like that, to see all that work they did on the stenciling and all the skulls on the shoulders and everything. I just still think it's still just such a simple and beautiful suit.
Mm. Now, we were talking about 100% Billy before. Your the body part, is that padded or is that 100% Chris?
50-50. 50% me, 50% padding. And I did want... So funny enough, the base suit is from a company called White Sheep Leather, and it's actually a Batman Noel style suit. They offer it in gray. And the more I looked at the suit, I'm like, I like that plating. I like the V taper. And that's what I've always loved about the Phantom, you know, that old school, you know, V shape he has, the wide back and the strongman look. And I messaged them, I go, can you guys do this in purple? And they sent me fabric samples of different shades of purple. And I'm like, that one, they made it in purple, sent it to me. I got mortified at how silly I looked. And then, yeah, I had been training for a couple of months and kind of filled the suit out a bit. So it's 50-50, but I wanted that plating there to give it a purpose and also to realize that, you know, this isn't just a spandex lycra suit. This is actually going to protect him whilst he's out there, you know, doing good.
So what now, most people who watch this, they're going to be like me, out of shape. You know, but we've all dreamt of being the Phantom at one stage of your life. So, and you know, you're 50-50, so you're halfway there. What is involved in your training to be able to fill out a suit, just to be able to give us a bit of an idea?
Keep it old school, man, and keep it simple. Just those old school compound lifts, like what Arnie and Lou Ferrigno did back in the golden era of bodybuilding. You know, your bench press, your squats, your deadlifts, your military press, just the compound movements that involved a lot more muscle groups and just lifting smart, but also lifting heavy. So you're really challenging your body to grow. And also just eat properly, man. Eat and sleep. People don't realize how important sleep is with getting in shape and putting on size and stuff like that. Don't get me wrong, man. I love my red wine. I love my pizza. I love my burgers, but you just try and balance everything. Don't restrict yourself because that's when you really fall off the wagon. Just moderation. That's just how it is. And just be smart about what meals you're having. And, you know, don't just live on chicken and broccoli. If anything, that's counterproductive as opposed to what we thought back in the day where how we thought that's how you properly get in shape. It's not. It's not fun either. You got to make your training fun. And like you look at Billy in that scene in the skull cave, he just looks incredible. I do believe he trained for a year to get to that. And he's a big guy too. And he's a swimmer naturally. I think he does a lot of swimming. So he's always had that broadness to him.
I think like whenever I think of the Phantom, I think of like the swimmer. Like, you know, you look at, you know, you're probably the same era of me as like the Ian Thorpes and stuff like that, where they're that big, they've got those big shoulders and he had that natural V as well. So that's how I, you know, someone like an AFL footballer or a swimmer, that athletic, but could bench press, that could, you know, run. Cause you know, the Phantom's supposed to be, you know, strength of 10 tigers, but can outrun a deer. And, you know, you can't do that if you're, you know, a rugby player, I guess, is a lack of a better term, where you have to tackle and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm sure a lot of fans would have not thought that they would have got a health and fitness lesson in a Phantom podcast. So it's the first time we've done that. So that was great.
Oh, it's a first for everything, man. I'm glad to have been a part of it. It's Phantom and Health 101.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you're known as Cosplayer Chris. So you don't just do the Phantom. What are some other cosplayers that you've done?
So my main one is Batman. I'm a massive Batman fan. So I've done certain iterations of bat suits throughout the years, like the Nightmare Batman that Ben Affleck wore with a trench coat, the traditional Batfleck look. Recently did the Robert Pattinson one. I do my own take on the character with Pirate Batman, what Batman would have looked like when pirates were around. Then that's my baby. I really do love that one. Done The Witcher. Captain America, Superman, Whiplash from Iron Man 2. I'm currently also making a Eddie Munson cosplay from season 4 of Stranger Things. So that's been a lot of fun. And it's fun to do a cosplay like that where it's a lot more comfortable as opposed to, you know, getting in a suit like this. I just love keeping at each end of the spectrum with cosplays, you know, like Captain Boomerang as well, Jack Sparrow, Joker. So I try and just do everything, but also I've got to resonate with the character and have a love for the character. I just want to, I don't want to do something because it's trending at the time. That's just not me. And some people do it and more power to them. You know, they rock it. It's just not me. I've really got to resonate with the character.
Yeah. And your love and your passion will come out in the finished product as well.
100%. Exactly. That's it, man. Spot on.
Yeah. Now, recently on the podcast, we had a discussion, and I reckon you might be a little bit better experience.
Okay.
The Phantom costume, a onesie or a twosie?
Do I know?
Or like, what's yours? What do you think? What, you know, like.
So Billy's one is a twosie with those beautiful trunks covering the separation point at the crutch.
Yeah.
For me, mine's a onesie. So onesie with a zip up the back. And whilst I was working on the suit, I had rigid wire wrapped around the actual zipper so I could put it on myself like a wetsuit. Because a lot of the time my partner would be at work and she wasn't able to help me in the suit. So I got my dog here, but my dog's not going to help me zip up in the suit. So a lot of times where I had to like do fittings and because I did have to take the suit to the tailors, my local tailor, to get the cuffs tightened, and also the sides were a bit loose, so I had to get the sides taken in so it's nice and tight. I just feel that one piece suits usually work the best because they look natural. But in terms of what they did with Billy with his upper and lower, and then have the trunks cover the seam line, that works as well because it essentially looks seamless with the once the trunks are on.
And you've got the belt as well, which can kind of cover and help pull.
Exactly. Yeah. So that like once like all that. The pieces are together, it looks like one piece. So that's really good costuming. But for me, as much as a pain in the butt as it is, zip up the back, one piece.
So do you just have to like, and you know, we're going way off tangent here, but for a onesie with the hook and everything like that, do you just have to like dehydrate yourself before you get into it for the day?
No. So, oh man, we're going to get real, intimate here. people are just going to be like, oh my God, why do you have this guy on? So usually what happens,
that's where my mind go, and maybe it's me, but like, you know, like a twosie, you can pull it down and go to the toilet, but
yeah. So a lot of people don't know this. So most times out of 10, you're not going to have a zipper in the front of your suit. If you're smart and you do have an invisible zip put in, more power to you. Very, very smart. Me, not so smart. And also sometimes you can see the zip and it just looks weird. It's like, mommy, why does the Phantom have a fly? It's just weird. So usually the day of a con, in this case, when I did the Phantom at Supernova, when I saw Jamie and everyone, I chug a lot of water and then I do what's called a tactical wee. When you get to the event, you find the nearest bathroom before you suit up, do your last big wee for several hours, get in the suit. And even though you do smash water throughout the day, you don't have the urge to go to the loo because you're on adrenaline and you're in this hot suit. Your body's just like using it all up. It doesn't even touch the sides. So when you get home, you do probably a minute long wee and then you're good to go. And that's how it is. Happens with a lot of Batman cosplayers too. Once you're in that suit, you can't go to the loo. And if you want to, it's an ordeal to take pieces off, go to the loo, come back, suit back up. So you cop it. There have been times where I have kind of watched what I've eaten and drunk the night before. So I'm a lot more flatter for certain suits that aren't as flattering, and you got to kind of watch how you look. So there is a bit of method to the madness sometimes when it comes to getting in these suits.
Yeah, no, because I've heard of stories of like, you know, costumes and makeup and stuff like that. Literally, you know, once you're in it, until that day is finished. And so I just, it's just, especially when you said that your suit is a onesie.
Yeah. So it's I was tinkering with the idea of taking it back to the tailor and having him put an invisible zip in where the trunk line is. And it could definitely work. So again, I also want to put like a bullet hit on one of the arms and have some blood coming out. So this is like you do your first run at Supernova,
yep,
and then you go back to the drawing board and add or take away stuff or improve upon stuff, make things more practical. So, this cowl, actually has a zip at the back. So it's not it is a one piece, but it has a zip at the back. It just makes putting the cowl on and off a lot more easier. And that way you don't stretch the rubber on the neck when you pull it over your head, because over time it does fatigue the rubber. Having a zip there at the back, it just makes life a lot more easier. And once you're all suited up, no one really gives a hoot that you've got a zip in the back.
Yeah. So, here's a question for you. So now we know the Phantom doesn't exist in real life and all that, but if he did, how far off what you've done do you think the Phantom's costume would be? Is it fairly accurate? Like, if the Phantom were to exist, he would have to go through what you're going through?
I'm thinking a lot more tactical, and that's originally what I envisioned. And I actually spoke to Jamie a lot. I kind of wanted to have a bit of an insight to what Jamie thought. And I said to him, I thought a lot along the lines of the Dark Knight suit, Christian Bale's Dark Knight suit, with all bit of plating, separated plating, you know, Kevlar, you know, tri-weave, stuff like that, carbon fiber. I feel there'd be a lot more going on under the suit. It may look the same as or similar to what I've done, but under it, there's like tightly woven Kevlar under there. There's like patches where he's repaired stuff if it's just one suit. Even so much so, like the Robert Pattinson bat suit, how it looks like it's been Frankensteined and put together from different pieces, you know, police belts and stuff like that. I feel that's how it would be now. But obviously, it definitely has to serve a purpose and not look silly. That's the hardest part. With the Phantom, you're treading such a fine line between looking like a giant purple condom or a badass. It's like with Deadpool, you know, before the weathering, before everything, it's just a giant red man, and then Phantom, giant purple man. And that was always keeping it in mind. It's got to look badass. And I'd like to think that I got there some way, shape or form, and there's still plenty to do on the suit. Like, it's typical to say this, but an artist's work is never really done. And I kind of love that, though, that like there's stuff I want to add for the suit to tell a story. That's what I've always had in my head. Whenever you're making a cosplay, it's got to tell a story, whether it's clean or heavily weathered and distressed like this suit, it has to tell a story. And that's why I want to add like a bullet hit, you know, because the Phantom's human. He may cop a flesh wound from a passing bullet. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Hmm.
No worries. Wow, it's been in depth, personal in aspects. Funny. As well. but no, it's been amazing talking to you, learning a little bit more about it. Is there anything that I've kind of missed or you thought that you would like to share that I haven't asked or anything like that?
No, man, you've been amazing. This has been a lot of fun. Like, you don't get to talk to a lot of Phantom enthusiasts much, so it's been quite refreshing to have this one-on-one. So thank you for having me on.
No worries. And to be able to find you, your YouTube channel is the best way of doing that, and just search for Cosplay Chris.
Yeah, man. So YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, just Cosplay Chris, and you'll see a cartoon version of my mug there, and that's pretty much it.
No worries. Well, really appreciate it. Lastly, now, Phantom fans love buying stuff and spending their money. It's a very expensive addiction. Your R&D or anything like that, I'm sure there's going to be at least one Phantom fan that's going to be thinking this. Your R&D processes, are there any parts that you've kept that you might be interested in selling to any Phantom fans out there?
Actually, I was thinking about doing a run of cowl and eye mask kits. So like, cause I have a silicon mold, I can make as many of these as I want. I have had people reach out. I just, now that we're actually here, when I was talking to them, we were in the V1 era. Now we're in the V2 where I'm happy with everything and it fits a lot of sized heads. It's at that margin where a lot of people can universally wear it who have different size heads. So yeah, absolutely. I plan to photograph this one and put it on my Etsy store and sell it as a set, you know, the eye mask and the cowl. So the eye mask just sits on the side here with Velcro. So it's not a band all the way around. You literally just put it on like sunglasses and the cowl Velcros to the eye mask. So it's very practical. So yeah, I do plan to sell copies of these as a set.
No worries. And you'll let us know when that is ready so we can let some fans know as well. But yeah, of course, just follow you on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, and I'm sure you'll see that as well.
You will see them, yeah, on my Etsy store. I'll make sure to put some links up and stuff like that when they're ready to go.
No worries. That sounds great. So thank you, Chris. It's a good name for the Phantom, Chris as well. So it works quite well. At first, I didn't know whether that was your real name or whether you were just calling it's yourself an alias. Chris.
Yeah. My real name's Kit.
But no, look, really appreciate your time. Appreciate you giving us an insight into your cosplay, which a lot of fans saw and appreciated and really enjoyed as well. So thank you. For people who want to know more about us, we're on chroniclechamber.com. You can email us, which is chroniclechamber@gmail.com. If you want to follow us, all our podcasts, go to your favorite podcast player or YouTube. We're on social media as well. And until next time, happy phantoming.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
Piracy, injustice and cruelty, and all my sons will follow me. So evildoers will believe that this man cannot die.
The Phantom,
the ghost who walks.
The Phantom,
enemies beware, the Phantom's always there, but you won't find the Phantom. He finds